Hello and welcome to All in the Addicted Gamblers podcast. My name is Brian and I have not placed a bet since July of 2014. However, some of you know that I did go down a route with some baseball cards a few years back, and that is relevant today because we're talking to Alex from Collectors MD. Alex is somebody with lived experience with gambling harm as well as a collector who discovered that collecting can get a little like gambling and behaviors. And he's here to talk about his awesome, first one I know about, recovery group, recovery website, recovery ecosystem for not just card collectors, but collectors of all kinds. Correct, Alex?
That is correct. Collectors of all kinds.
Alex, thanks for doing this. How are you? Why don't you share a little bit about yourself and your background and how you got to create Collectors MD? Because I heard it's crazy that I heard about it on a YouTube channel I watch. And then you emailed, not because I reached out, but because somebody else was like, "Oh, you should talk to Brian."
Yeah, that is crazy how things work, especially on the internet. And we can get into a little bit more of that in a bit. But yeah, Brian, thanks so much for having me. For those of you who are not familiar with me, most of you probably aren't. My name is Alex Efron. I come from both sides of the conversation. I've been a lifelong collector of all things sports cards, sneakers, memorabilia, jerseys, hats, you name it.
Figures? Did you ever collect figures?
When I was a kid, there were these things called
Starting
McFarlane.
lineup?
Are you talking about like figurines?
I'm talking about like anything. Like now, what do they have? The Funko Pops. But in
Yeah.
like back in the day, like when we were younger, it would have been like starting lineup figures. I collected horror figures,
Yeah,
like
I
Michael
remember
Myers and
those.
stuff.
There
But I
was
was just starting lineup figures. Did you ever get those?
no, I don't think so. There was a brand called McFarlane
Oh yeah. They did some horror
toys.
ones too.
Yeah. They did like ultra sort of realistic figurines, sports players, pop culture icons, characters and shows and movies. So I got into that a little bit as like a, teenager, high schooler, and then I kind of grew out of it. My younger brother was really destructive and he ruined a lot of my things. So I kind of just like lost interest and focused on, what was in the present. But I had my Funko Pop,
Oh, okay.
era for sure, maybe for like a year. But yeah, you name it, I collected it. Watches was, huge for me for a long time. Professionally, I've spent well, I should say I'm a lifelong sport collector, but I've also lived through gambling addiction. I want to, make that abundantly clear right off the bat. Professionally, I've spent years in marketing and brand development. And personally, I know the highs, the lows, and the consequences that can come with compulsive behavior. And so, out of that mix, I started Collectors MD. And so what it is at its core, it's a support-based community for people in the card and collectibles hobby. And like you said, Brian, it could be any sort of collectible vertical. People get hooked on any and everything these days, as we know. It can even be as simple as just compulsive spending, retail therapy, people who just can't stop ordering crap, on eBay or Amazon. And so, these people are quietly struggling with the same cycles that you see in gambling. Things like chasing losses, chasing the next hit, losing track of time, money, and mental health. And so what we do is we host weekly peer support meetings, very similar to Gamblers Anonymous. But we also do quite a bit of other work. We create daily content. So we have these things called daily reflections, which are essentially journal entries that allow people to sort of reflect and take a step back and reevaluate where they are in their collecting journey. We publish those every single day, and we have a number of other series like our Collector Spotlight, which features a collector who collects with intention once a month. We also have three podcasts. The Collector's Compass, Behind the Breaks, and Collector's MD Features, where, similar to what we're doing here, I've been doing kind of the podcast circuit over the last couple months, and so I've been syndicating all of that content into one streamlined platform, which we're calling Features. But anyway, we're doing a lot in this space, and we have a growing network of therapists and recovery partners. We're growing out our referral network. And we're trying to create a space that, I wish had existed when I was stuck in these cycles, where people can talk openly without shame and get real tools and resources, and a community around them, right? And the reason this matters is because the collecting world, the hobby, whatever you want to call it, has shifted. It used to be all about nostalgia, building sets, telling stories, sharing stories,
It was
but
legit collecting. It was like getting and hanging on to.
right.
And now it's turned into getting and flipping.
Exactly. And that's because of today's break culture, is what we call it. Breaking. We can get into that in a bit. High-end products and 24/7 marketplaces like Fanatics Live and whatnot. It now mirrors gambling almost to a T, right? So when you're ripping a pack, you're essentially, taking a bet. You're placing a bet. You might get something like a life-changing card, or you might walk away with absolutely nothing. And the dopamine hit is the same as pulling a slot, a slot lever, or sweating a, 10-leg parlay. And for kids, that's especially dangerous, right? This next generation is who we're really looking out for, because it conditions them to normalize risk-reward chasing at a really young age. And so Collectors MD is here to help the hobby evolve responsibly. We don't want to kill collecting. We're not here to cancel culture, cancel collecting, cancel break culture. We still want to be a part of it to an extent, right? But what we want to do is make it healthier, safer, and more sustainable. And that means having these honest conversations about risk, building guardrails, helping people remember that collecting really should be about passion, purpose, connection, right? Clarity, intention. These are all adjectives that we use to describe how we should be thinking about collecting, as opposed to what we're seeing a lot of in this space, which is compulsion. So I'm really excited about the direction that Collectors MD is headed in. We've had a tremendous amount of support in a very short time, doing some really, really exciting things in the space. I've been fortunate to be welcomed on a handful of podcasts that are well established and reach vast audiences. And so we're growing the platform. It's more than just a weekly meeting. It's really becoming a full-fledged movement with all these different branches. I mentioned the content, the referral network, the community. In addition to the weekly meetings, we also have a group chat. We have a Discord, so people can stay connected in between these Wednesday night meetings. And people are also contributing, which is really great. So I mentioned the daily reflection. I'm not the only one writing those. We have members from our community contributing almost every day. So that's been amazing to see. And we've seen some incredible stories, both good and bad in these weekly meetings. And some of them, get really, really emotional. You hear some of the things that are happening to people out there, and it's mind-boggling that, sports cards, Pokemon cards, can have this type of impact on people, the same sort of insidious ways that things like gambling, alcohol, and substance abuse and addiction can have. So it's a scary place, but again, we're doing what we can to provide the people that need it with the tools, resources, and a safe space for them to be able to turn to, because, like you said, nothing like this existed before Collectors MD.
I wanna hold. I have some card collecting specific things I want to talk about, but other than cards, what some of the people who are part of Collectors MD, what other than cards are people collecting that they have found that they are running into harm with?
It's really mostly been cards up to this point. We are starting to explore these other verticals, and we're seeing it across other verticals. But there's something very unique about sports cards, TCG, pop culture cards, whatever you want to call them, because there's also the non-sports cards that aren't technically TCG, like the Marvel and the Disney, right? That have become insanely popular. But the nature of it, right? With the risk reward and not knowing what you're getting, which makes it mirror gambling like to a T, like I said before, is what sucks people in and spits them out, right? When you're buying something like a watch or a pair of sneakers, you generally know what you're getting. You know, you might have that impulsive itch to buy something maybe you can't afford or something that you've had your eye on that, you know, you probably shouldn't buy, but you do it anyway. Like that's a part of the cycle, but it's not a one-to-one as it relates to the cards, right? Because with the cards, you're buying a hobby box, you're buying a pack, maybe you're joining a break, and you don't know what you're getting. You don't know what your return is going to look like, right? And if we're looking at it from just a monetary standpoint, a lot of people are just chasing profits. People want to spend $100 and get back $200, the same way you would sit down at a blackjack table and start playing, and you know, you either win or you lose. Same thing when you place a, you know, a sports bet. Last night the Eagles and Cowboys played, you know, half the country was on the Cowboys, the other half was on the Eagles. Half of them doubled their money, half of them didn't. Now, of course, you have things like parlays and prop bets and odds and all these other, you know, baked in sort of extracurricular type of betting. But generally speaking, it's a 50-50 you know, chance at profiting. And so what people don't realize is that with the cards, you don't have fi a 50-50 chance of doubling your money. You don't even have a 50-50 chance of making back your money. As a matter of fact, in most cases, there's something like a 5% chance of making back your money and maybe a 2% chance of profiting at all, right? So people who are new to the hobby, especially young kids, just have this skewed perception based on what they're hearing, what they're being fed in on social media by the breakers,
Oh yeah,
by
popular videos are ones where cards get pulled, and so they see that and
right.
go, "Oh, I could get that," not knowing that there's thousands of us like deeply regretting many of the purchases we made of jumbo hobby boxes.
Exactly. So it's yeah, it's a lot of just misinformation being passed around. Really, I don't know what adjective to use, misleading marketing that these manufacturers, the platforms, the breakers are using every day to lure these people in. People get sucked into these cycles. Maybe they have beginner's luck and they hit big in their first break or their first box, and suddenly they think that this is the norm and they can do this again, right? They can repeat what just happened, and that's never the case. Nobody is going to be able to open a box and 10x their money time and time again. It just doesn't work that way, right? Like it would be the equivalent of just hitting on 10 leg parlays over and over and over again. That doesn't happen, right? Your odds are ex exponentially lower, or I should say astronomically lower, than that of a typical sports bet. Like I was saying, unless you're looking at like, you know, these long odds, teasers and parlays that people also get, you know, hooked on. It's just like insane how minimal your chances actually are. And so people don't realize that. And then there's the whole nostalgic component of it, where it's like this, you know, activity that's rooted in, you know, your childhood, and you did it maybe with your dad or your brother or friends when you were a kid, and you go to your local hobby shop and opening a box is, you know, like bringing you back to a really sentimental time in your life. People get sucked in that way, right? People get sucked in because maybe they're chasing their favorite athlete or player on their team, or you know, a specific set that is nostalgic to them. And so there's, you know, a whole plethora of reasons why people get sucked in. But ultimately, many of those reasons aren't for sort of like the purity, right, of collecting and why we started collecting in the first place. And that's what we're trying to correct. We want to promote collecting with intention, not compulsion. And you know, there's two sides to this, and this is something I actually published yesterday. I published a daily reflection called Two Lanes of Recovery. There's abstinence or intention, right? And with gambling, GA says you have to abstain completely. You can't place a bet, and go back. You can't go back, once you're an addict, once you've established that you have a problem and you have this disease, you can't go back to gambling. It's just not possible. With collecting, we're looking at it through sort of a different lens. And I'm just going to quickly read this article, if that's okay with you, Brian, just because I think it might resonate with a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. Go for it.
Again, the title is Two Lanes of Recovery, Abstinence or Intention. I published this yesterday. It's on collectorsmd.com/daily-reflection. You can look at all of our daily reflections there anytime you'd like. They live in perpetuity. And again, we publish them every day. All right, so this was yesterday's. In recovery, there isn't just one path. For some, the only sustainable way forward is complete abstinence. For others, the goal is to rebuild a healthier relationship by practicing intention, boundaries, and clarity. This is true across many high-risk, dopamine-driven activities: gambling, day trading, compulsive spending, and yes, collecting. Some members of our community recognize that they can never return to cards or to any form of leisurely spending or collecting for that matter. For them, the hobby became toxic, a source of compulsion rather than joy. Maybe they were never truly in it for the purity of collecting, or maybe the purity was stripped away by the insidious side of the hobby, the endless chase for profit, the constant pursuit of the next dopamine hit, or impressing others. When the hobby reaches this point, stepping away completely and perhaps permanently may be the only safe option. Walking away for good isn't weakness, it's wisdom and courage. Others in our community don't necessarily identify as having a problem. They still love the hobby, but they want to be proactive about collecting with intention before it takes control. For them, it's about setting boundaries, practicing mindfulness, and finding clarity so that collecting remains a source of connection and joy, not compulsion and regret. They understand and acknowledge that the hobby has evolved into an ecosystem built to pull people in, engineered to exploit excitement rather than nurture passion, and if left unchecked, to keep them trapped. This distinction isn't unique to collecting. It mirrors other high-risk dopamine-driven activities: gambling, day trading, even shopping. Each operates on the same neurological feedback loops. But if someone struggles with gambling, does that automatically mean they can't safely participate in other high-risk activities like day trading, or even something as seemingly harmless and socially accepted as fantasy sports? Then there's this little graphic of a football player. It says, "Is fantasy football gambling?" And the caption is, "With football season officially upon us and chatter and camaraderie around gambling and sports cards everywhere, now is a good time to take a step back, pause, and assess where we stand in relation to it all." So is fantasy football gambling, or is fantasy sports gambling? Some say yes, some say no. Gamblers Anonymous defines it as gambling, and for some, it triggers the same compulsions as a night at the blackjack table or formulating a multi-leg teaser. But for others, it feels more like casual competition among friends and might not ignite the same fire. The truth is, it depends on the person. Each of us has a different threshold, a different set of risk factors, and a unique relationship to risk, reward, and control. What feels harmless to one person can be destructive to another. That's why these conversations matter, so we can recognize when the line between fun and compulsion starts to blur and adjust our habits accordingly before things spiral. I'm almost done. I know this is a little bit longer
You're
than I
fine.
realized. That's also why there's no cookie cutter approach. Each person's circumstances are unique, and every individual's journey deserves to be treated as such. For some, abstinence is freedom. For others, intention is balance. Neither path is necessarily better than the other. It's about finding the lane that keeps you safe, grounded, and true to yourself. And for some, it might be a hybrid between the two, or another line in, or another lane entirely. At the end of the day, we don't have all the answers, and there's no perfect antidote we can prescribe to cure addiction. But at Collectors MD, we honor every lane. What matters most is that you find a path that works for you, not one dictated by the industry, the market, or even the people around you. The choice isn't one size fits all. It's deeply personal, and whatever path you choose, you don't have to walk it alone. We support you wherever you are in your journey. Hashtag Collectors MD. The healthiest lane is the one that keeps you free from compulsion and rooted in choice, whether that means walking away entirely or collecting with intention.
Very nice. I mean, gambling is, as we define it, is risking something of value for an uncertain outcome.
Right.
I mean, if you're playing free fantasy and there's nothing that you're risking, then go nuts. But if you're putting up
Totally.
money, it's probably gambling. But again, like it doesn't matter if something's gambling or not. If it's causing you harm and you continue to do it, you're either lying to yourself because you enjoy doing it, and that's
Yep.
fine. Like it's your life. There's no right way. Like GA's not 100% right. Like that, it works for a lot of people. It's great, but it doesn't mean that you have to live by those rules. Like if you're like, well, every time I play blackjack, I lose and I overdo it. But every time I play poker, I'm okay. Like that, it's your life. Like, but are you really okay? I think a lot of people just lie to themselves because they want to be able to participate in that behavior that feels good.
Right.
And you can't do that if you want the healthy existence. I used to laugh at harm reduction. I mean, I still don't really think that harm reduction in gambling. Because you have to free your brain of that burden. And if you don't free it, if you keep participating in the activity and risking something, even if it's less frequent with less money, you're still giving yourself that boost. And you're never going to heal if you keep participating in that activity. So it's hard. I mean, listen, Alex, I'm sitting here because I've been trying to get rid of these cards for the last year. And I'm sitting here. My desk is covered in cards that I've been trying to get rid of for the last year. And I do. I list shit every day on eBay. And I don't like, I'm not asking for top dollar. I list this crap to get rid of it. If I had bigger boxes, I'd probably have bigger lots on eBay. But as I'm doing this, I'm like, what the hell was wrong with me? What have I done? This is insane how many cards I have. How many boxes I bought thinking I was going to get something? I never got anything that was, those cards that they'll show you on the YouTube channels that they sell, like on Spitball, and they'll show you like a $12,000 card or something that was sold, and they'll talk about a recent sale of like a 12,000. I'm
Right.
like, a 12,000? I've never gotten a card that was, I think the highest one I ever sold on eBay was like $600.
Right.
And that was not without trying by spending the money I spent. So, yeah, I don't think people are ever going to get their money back, especially now, like the current product, the 2023, 4, 5. It's all so overpriced. 2024 Chrome update went insane, but it had a lot of people in it, and that's why it went insane, right?
The prices just skyrocketed
The
across the
prices
board.
skyrocketed. The product got watered down by all these ridiculous parallels and stuff they stick in there. So yeah, you're getting more parallels, but instead of, the nice parallel out of 25, 50, 99, 150, whatever, you're getting a non-numbered holiday parallel that the base card is selling for 79 cents and this parallel is selling for $1.75.
Right.
So there's no, like, yeah, you get another Ohtani, but it's just a shitty copycat
Right.
Ohtani that you don't want.
The problem is
Basically, like,
oversaturation.
it's insane.
They
Like, it's
make
good.
an outrageous number of sets, subsets, parallels, serial numbered cards, autos, patch autos. I mean,
Yeah.
it's been this way for
I mean,
as
they
long.
print money. That's what they're doing, right?
Right,
They could
right.
do whatever they want because they know people will buy it, but they could all of a sudden next week be like, oh, we have an even rarer thing than a one of one.
Right.
We have a, I don't know how you do that, but they just keep creating bullshit to sell us.
Yeah. One of ones aren't even one of ones anymore, right? Because
Not if they're Leaf, that's for
every,
damn sure. Jesus.
yeah, Leaf. I mean, it's crazy. They have these things called black box or white box, one of ones that Panini puts out as sort of redemption replacements. And redemptions is a whole nother story that we could spend an hour talking about. But basically, when the national rolls around every year, you have an opportunity where you can sign up for an appointment with Panini to exchange a handful of open redemptions that have yet to be redeemed for a black box or multiple black boxes. And what they do is they essentially take cards that haven't gone through production or like are duplicates. So for instance, there might be a serial numbered run of like 25 cards of, let's say, I don't know, Jahmyr Gibbs, right? In this one particular parallel from this one particular set. In most cases, instead of printing 25, which actually will make it through production, or be circulated, as they say. They'll do 27, right? So they'll have two extra copies, and they usually do that in case somebody gets a damaged one and wants a replacement, or there's another, sort of circumstance beyond their control that, they would need a backup for, right? And so most of the time, those backups don't get used, but they're still signed by the player. Whereas, like, Jameer will sign 27 copies instead of 25, right? And they'll take those copies and they'll stamp. They don't have the serial number on them, those two extra copies, but they'll stamp black box one of one, right? This little logo that Panini makes. And then they'll put it into one of these black boxes, and then people get those as a replacement. Usually they're decent cards. Like, they have nicer ones than others. And unfortunately, Panini does a really poor job of sort of tiering them out and marking which ones are worth what. Like, so for instance, you can go and you can get a black box that's worth 5 grand based on the redemptions that you have open. And then the next person can go and, exchange $300 worth of redemptions and get a $300 box, but they both look exactly the same. And then people are turning around and reselling them to the after the like on the aftermarket for the same price across the board. So people don't know what they're actually getting. The only person who truly knows the value is the original person who received it, right? So anyway, those one of ones aren't even one of ones because they were a part of another run. They may have been like a red parallel from whatever subset. Looks identical to the other cards in that same set that are numbered to 25. The only difference is that Panini stamped a black box one of one on the back, and it doesn't have a serial number. So yeah, it's crazy. I mean, some of these rookies, I think most recently it was either Justin Herbert, which was like 5 years ago at this point, or Victor Wembanyama, which was last year. There was a stat that I saw that like they had close to 2,000 one of ones,
All the different product
from
ones.
their rookie year across all these different products. And that was just with Panini, right? We're not talking about the unlicensed cards with Topps and Fanatics and Leaf and, whatever other manufacturers are putting the junk out there. But what is really a one of one? Collectors and hobbyists throw the word true around a lot, where it's like, this is the true one of one, or the true RPA, or the true black of a particular card. Like, what is the true? Who decides what the true is, right? Like, is it Panini? Is it Fanatics? Is it the collectors? Is it the community? Is it, the online forums? Is it eBay? Like, no, it's the collector. It's whatever the value of something is, monetary, emotional, mental, like whatever values you are sort of looking at, and a lot of times it's sentimental value, should be, up to the owner of that particular card, right? The value lies in the eyes of the beholder is what we try to say. But unfortunately, the market and the platforms and the breakers and the marketplaces, everybody dictates what a card is worth. And so people just get lost in the hype. They get lost in the shuffle, and they get lost in themselves. They don't know what they're collecting anymore. Are they collecting cards they like, or are they just collecting what's popular? Everybody was hooked on Caitlin Clark for the last year, year and a half. Now she's out for the season, and her market is, slowly tanking. So, Paige Bueckers is up next in the WNBA. Like, how long is that going to go on for? I mean, it's all hype. That's what it is. It's all just manufactured hype.
Back when I participated in breaks, and I did way too many. Every now and I can't remember the last time I participated in one, but every now and then, I will just look on eBay to see what breaks are happening, like what is the product that people are breaking. And some of this shit, like over the years, I've realized is just so completely worthless. It doesn't matter what cards you get from that. No one is paying what they pay for the licensed product. If you're buying baseball Panini, if you're getting a Boys of Summer Jackson Chourio auto,
Boys of Summer.
you're not getting, it's not going to be, you're going to like, you just hang on to it because it's more of use to you than that than it is on the open market. But a specific break comes to mind, and I bid on it because I thought they had 10 boxes, and I misread it, and it was one box, and I was like, why the hell would I sign up for a one box break? And it was a
Right.
father and his two sons. And I
Oh
was like,
boy.
oh, how adorable. He's getting them into breaking early. And then
Right.
it got worse because they did exactly. So my team, I had the Angels. My team, I got the one auto in the box. I did, my team. And it was Trey Cabbage.
Okay.
So maybe this was the beginning of last year or something. I might have I bought, I think it was like $7 or something.
Yeah. Was he a rookie in that set?
Yeah, he was, yeah, one of those nameless rookies that you just
Because he's
pass by.
yeah, because he's like 28.
So instead of like in my previous experience with breaks, people are like, hey, an auto, good for you. You got an auto. They don't shit on you for a shitty auto. The
Right.
dad and his kids look up the auto, start making fun of, like, oh, $3. That's all you got. $3 auto. What kind of, that's crappy, Cabbage. And I'm like, you're crapping on the guy who just gave you money to participate in your little break because
Right.
that's
People
not worth.
just,
How do you know I'm not a huge Trey Cabbage fan? I'm just so happy to have his auto on a card. And so
how do you know
that
you're
right
not,
there, I
how do
was
they know
like,
you're
this
not Trey Cabbage himself?
this yeah. Like, this dad is now teaching them, oh, only the money matters. The product doesn't matter. It matters what you can sell it for and get money for. And so the collecting
And
aspect to me at that point, I was like, oh, this is all shit in the can. And this is the society we live in now.
that's what we're seeing more and more of, and that's the biggest problem. Is the associated value with cards. People just only looking at
They
profit,
throw out
only
paper.
looking at, yeah. I mean,
Bowman
like
paper, just throw it out. We're not even gonna ship it.
backyard breaks, for instance, is like one of the biggest
Those
breaking.
douchebags.
Yeah, a lot of people, they're very polarizing. I'll just leave it at
You can. I'll call them fucking
that.
douchebags.
They recently introduced a new sort of system, I guess you could call it, where they would have Quick Consign, which is a consignment company that they'll sell your cards for you. Basically, post up at their HQ where they break, and you can basically DM them. You hit a card in a break, you DM them. Quick Consign will sell it for you on the spot. So it's like you don't even get the card in your physical possession ever. Right. You're joining a break. You're hoping you hit a card that you can flip. The chances of you actually hitting a card that's going to make your money back again are extremely slim. But they're offering the service so that, if you want to make some of your money back, you can. And people get sucked into that and they start doing that. Next thing you know, you start looking at the numbers and it's like, all right, today I joined five breaks. I bought five spots in each break. I spent $2,500. I'm going to list all of my cards with Quick Consign because that's an option now, and I'm going to get back $300. It's like what's the point of
Just don't
doing that?
spend the
I just
money.
don't I don't you're not even like at that point you're not even collecting anymore. There is no collecting. You are buying into a break. You're literally handing cash over to the middleman, which is the breaker, and they are pulling cards out of a pack and then turning around and handing them over to Quick Consign for them to list those cards on eBay. It's like it just doesn't make any sense. But you have, the characters over at Backyard Breaks that are hyping this whole process up and posting it on their story and making these posts about why, it's the best value and you've got to join. And if you don't, then what they're doing is they're creating a sense of FOMO. It's this whole like sort of fraternity energy where it's like an exclusive fan club. Like you want to be a part of this. You want to hang out with us. You want to be hanging out with the cool kids on the block. Join our break. Hand your cards over to Quick Consign, and you're it's the fast lane to becoming popular. I mean, that's more or less what it is, right? People like to hear their names called out on the live streams with 500, 1,000 people in the live. People like that sort of attention. In a rare, very rare case, you actually do hit a card that's noteworthy, and usually it's the same names being called out, right? Like because those people are just buying tons of spots in these breaks, and so you throw enough crap at the wall, eventually some of it's going to stick. But if you're spending 10 grand on a break and getting back $1,000 worth of cards, yeah, somebody's going to like give you a shout out because you hit that $1,000 card, but you spent $10,000 to hit that card.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's what we're seeing more and more of the big whales, the guys that are going into these lives and ripping thousands, tens of thousands of dollars in wax in one sitting. These guys are hitting big cards and like, they're getting shout outs and, attention from the breakers, from the manufacturers, maybe even Topps or Panini are reposting, the video where the card was hit. But those are the same people that are spending all of their money and, losing in the long run or the short run for that matter. So it's all kind of just a giant scam. I hate to call it that. But breaking is, and as somebody who was involved on the other side, where like when I first got back into the hobby in the early days of the pandemic, I was breaking. I was in a break group with three buddies that I grew up with called BOGO Breaks, and we were ripping boxes on Instagram and Facebook. Eventually,
Did you wear
maybe
gloves?
we did
Oh, really?
actually. Yeah, I could show you some old footage. I did wear gloves early on when I was doing breaks on Facebook. They were like, very sort of accessible price point. I mean, like it would be like $50 to join a break, and we do like three boxes, and you weren't like forcing people or like creating a sense of FOMO or like screaming into the mic to get people to join, or berating people because the auctions aren't going for what they should, or whatever the breaker thinks they should. I mean, what it looks like today versus what it looked like 5 years ago is night and day. Now, I'm not saying breaking was safe or healthy back then. They're sort of different levels to it. But what it looks like today, this ecosystem is a gambling machine with absolutely zero guardrails and zero regulation. And so that's where collector's energy comes in. And I kind of want to go back to one thing that we addressed briefly when I was reading that Daily Reflection. One of the big differences between gambling and collecting is around abstinence, right? In Gamblers Anonymous, I mentioned this and you kind of confirmed it. The message is very clear. Full abstinence is the only way forward. And I personally get it, right? For gambling, that makes sense. You can't really place just one bet responsibly if you've crossed that line before. It's a slippery slope. It's way too dangerous. You're eventually going to, go full tilt, like we all do as compulsive gamblers. But collecting is a little bit more complicated. It's a little bit more of a gray area. And I'm going to preface saying that I'm not making excuses or justifying or saying that it's okay to collect, but for some people it really does need to be full abstinence, right? Cards or memorabilia become so tied up with compulsion that the healthiest choice is just to walk away completely. But for others, collecting still does bring joy, and this is sort of like where I'm not trying to make excuses for these people, but there's nostalgia and there's connection. There are things that exist here that don't exist in the world of gambling. Like, I mean, you could try to tell me that you're a big sports fan, and so placing a bet might make the game more exciting for you. But when it comes to like card games and casino, what are you going to try to tell me that like a particular slot machine makes you feel a certain type of way? Like, no, it's very black and white. People are gambling to scratch an itch, to chase that dopamine high, and to ultimately try to make some money. So with the sports cards, those people who are sort of collecting with intention, and it still brings joy for, the problem isn't the existence of cards in their life, it's how they interact with them, the boundaries, the mindsets, and the triggers. So that's where Collector's MD sort of takes a different approach from GA, where like GA is effective, but it can feel sort of cookie cutter, right? Same playbook for everyone. We're not here to knock that because it saved a lot of lives. And I attended GA meetings for a number of years, and I
Me too.
respect what they do and the foundation and the Yellow Book and all of that. I mean, we've taken the Yellow Book and we've adapted it into the Collector's MD Recovery Guide. Like, GA is sort of the foundation of what we're doing. But with that said, we look at recovery in the hobby through sort of a more holistic lens. We focus on the person, their specific history, their triggers, their goals. Like for one collector, abstinence might be wisdom, but for another, it's about learning how to engage intentionally. Again, setting budgets, defining priorities, and keeping the hobby a source of joy instead of stress. So again, instead of saying one size fits all, we ask, what's the lane that actually keeps you safe and grounded? And that's the heart of Collector's MD.
And I would, like, I agree with you. Like, if you, have a team like I love the Tigers, and if I was collecting every rookie the Tigers ever had because I wanted to keep it and collect, right? Isn't that the collecting part? You collect it to keep. It's when you get into the lotto ticket of it all of like, oh, I might get a good,
Scratch-offs.
and you might buy into a break to collect because you might be like, oh, I can get my specific team, and that's great. That's an easy way to get it without paying the huge price on the full box.
Right.
So I definitely agree with you. I see that, and I think there's ways, and like those spitballing guys talk about, like just buy single. Like if you want a card, just go buy the card. You're not gonna magically get this one in a million card in a box. Just go buy the card, and that makes sense. And like I as a kid enjoyed collecting sets, and as an adult after I bottomed out and just completely was addicted to cards again.
Yeah.
I started realizing like, oh, I can make a lot of sets out of all these cards that I bought. So I started
Right.
doing that, and that was fun. Like I enjoyed the collating and the putting in order and the sleeving and the putting in the box and having the set. And like I that part of the collecting I get. I will say, if we take a step back, all of this is built around some cardboard with a baseball player or a sports figure's name on it. Maybe that name is in a different color, and maybe that color has a number on it, and maybe that number color has their handwriting. But if you really take a step back, it is all very stupid. Like, I love sports,
Right.
but it is all just a piece of cardboard. Like, it's a
Right.
piece of cardboard that someone printed and said, this is worth something. And we bought into that. And I would think to people who aren't involved in it, like my friend Adam collects Magic the Gathering cards. And he will tell you he was fully addicted to collecting Magic the Gathering cards. Whereas
Right.
I see Magic the Gathering and I'm like, I don't want to play the game and these seem useless. And he's like, I want to play the game and there's valuable cards. So he started as somebody, much like I did when I was younger, collecting sports cards just to collect them because I liked it. He was playing the game. And then one day, where all of this kind of shifted, like Pokemon and all that, oh, there's value in some of the stuff I have. People want this stuff. And so now he's more in the brain of value in my cards and getting valuable cards. But I mean, just again, taking a step back, I see Magic cards. I'm like, these are stupid. Why would anyone spend money on this?
Right,
But I'm
right.
sure people would say the same thing about anything that anybody collects. I mean, I'm guessing you don't have blue hairs in your collector's MD with Hummels, right? I see Hummels and I'm like, I want to throw that against a brick wall
Right.
because it would be fun to break. But other people just love to have it. And we like, that's fine. It's life. We're all going to have little things that we like to have around us. As
Yeah.
I've gotten older and through this fine this card, hopefully this final card thing moment, I mean, I still from time to time like to complete sets or do something like that. Nothing like I used to.
Yep.
But I've kind of realized like why I want less stuff. Like I just want less stuff in my life. Like the collecting part
Less
is you get
is
it, and
more.
even the
Less is
sets,
definitely
like after I'm done building it, the building is the fun part. And then I
more.
put it in a box in the closet and it just sits there. And 99.9% of the people on the planet don't give a damn that I have it.
Right. Right.
None of my friends want to hear me talk about it. The other collectors, they might appreciate that I have it, but that conversation's 2 minutes. And then it's. So it is like to take a step back from it all, it is a strange thing to think about of like, oh, this person who
Is.
does a thing is on a piece of cardboard, and I paid how much money for that piece of cardboard?
Right. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, if you strip it all the way back, cards, like you said, they're literally just pieces of cardboard with a photograph and maybe, if you're lucky, some ink on them. And that's what makes the whole thing kind of wild. And we attach all of this value, all of this emotion, all of this financial pressure to something that in its purest form is no different than the paper in a notebook or, you know.
There's something very satisfying about looking at these,
Yeah.
right? Even though I know I have
That's
them,
where I was going with that.
there's
The
the satisfaction of
manufacturers.
going through and looking. I do like the stats on the back and I do like the pictures and I like it is a beauty.
The
And when it's color, when it's a good looking card and it's colorful and maybe a serial number, like it does look good. And
Yeah,
I don't
it
know why
does.
that
It does, but
satisfies me, but it does.
yeah, what it is, it's marketing. It's, you know, the manufacturers know what they're doing. They've spent years making the product feel more than just cardboard. They add things like jersey swatches, you know, bat pieces, shoelaces, different types of patches, on card autographs. You know, they experiment with different types of technology. They call it refractors, holograms, chromium finishes, all these sort of tech forward materials to make the card feel more innovative, more scarce, more worth chasing, right? So I think on one hand, like you're saying, it's definitely silly. You're fighting over a sliver of cardboard, but on the other hand, they've engineered these little pieces of cardboard into something that really taps, what we're talking about here, nostalgia, identity, and the gambler's rush all at once. And that combination is just so incredibly powerful.
That's a great explanation. The marketing part, you're right. I mean, yeah,
It's
they
marketing,
got me.
man. Fanatics, now that Fanatics has basically a monopoly in this space, they are exhausting all of their resources to keep the hobby growing, to keep the hobby moving forward. You know, not just with advancing the sort of innovative technology of the cards with the extra bells and whistles that they're adding every year. For instance, this new card that they have coming out next year is actually going to have the ping pong ball that I guess coincides with the player and where they were drafted, right? You know how they do the ping pong balls in the NBA draft lottery, and then the same thing
Yeah.
with the baseball. They're taking those ping pong balls, they're putting them inside of cards. I
So there's
literally
going to be a piece of
commented,
plastic in my card, and I'm going to be told this is from draft night 2022 or
well, yeah,
however
it's
long it
literally
was,
an entire,
2027.
it's not even just a piece of the ping pong ball, it's the entire ping pong ball sort of engulfed in the card. It's like I commented on the
Like they used to
Instagram
throw them
post,
away, and they're like, don't throw those away.
right? I was like, people are actually going to play beer pong with these to try to go viral. They're going to take one of these and they're just going to start playing beer pong with it, or they're going to start playing ping pong, and they're going to try to make a viral video with one of the lower end rookies or whatever. They're doing stuff like that. Another thing that's, I will admittedly say, it's pretty cool. I'm not overly cynical. I still love the hobby. Excuse me. I still love collecting. You know, one thing that Fanatics is doing that I think is pretty cool, are these debut patches. And not just the debut patches, but
Yeah.
there's a small detail that I don't think a lot of football fans might have noticed last night, and that was Saquon Barkley, who was the offensive player of the year in 2024, the 2024 season, last season. His NFL shield on his jersey, unlike all the other players, was actually gold. And so what they're doing is they're taking that shield, and every game he plays this year, he's going to have that unique shield along with the defensive player of the year, the MVP, and the handful of other players that were acknowledged as part of like the NFL rewards or awards or whatever they're called, these days. But they're taking those pieces and they're putting them into cards, and those are highly sought after pieces, right? They actually carry some sort of legitimate like value beyond just being a card with a relic from like a not from a specific game or event like they so often use. And like a lot of times they use like player worn, which basically just means the player put the jersey on and took it off in front of a rep from Tops, and then they took that jersey and they cut it up and they put it in a million different cards. These shields or these debut patches, which is basically from a player's first game ever, are being, manufactured into the cards and then being placed in these sets so that people can chase them. And that's why they're so valuable. I think the Paul Skeens sold for like $1.5 million to Dick's Sporting Goods last year. I don't know if you saw that,
I did.
but then they had it up for display at Fanatics Fest this past summer. And Olivia Dunn was there. I mean, they make a whole ordeal. They make a whole circus out of it, right? Olivia Dunn's walking around the floor. She's looking for a Paul Skeens card. She makes a deal with a breaker. That video goes viral. Fanatics reposts it. It's all premeditated. It's all premeditated marketing. They know exactly what they're doing. They're partnering with the right athletes. They're partnering with the right influencers, and they're printing money, hand over fist. And that's
And they're
the
creating, I mean, the same thing we look for in recovery is connection. And they are
right.
creating connection because if you have a little piece of a jersey that was worn in a game that you watched, you're like, holy crap, it's like I was there. and they give you that connection to the athlete. I guess that's why people like autographs, is it gives you that little like, oh, his hand touched this.
Right,
Like
which is why
I
people
was that
prefer
close to him.
on card autographs versus sticker autographs, which is another hot topic in the hobby.
Stickers are stupid.
Right. The players just sign these sheets of stickers and then they slap the sticker on the card.
And
It's like,
honestly, I was thinking about this, popped in my head the other day, and I was like, none of us would have any idea if it was just a random dude signing that player. And Topps just slapped their authentic. No one's, like you said, no one's regulating them. No one's
it's
checking
one
them.
of the
Oh, a Topps person was there watching them sign it. Okay, I guess that's all we have to go on because you told us that this was authenticated by them, maybe, but we would have no idea, really.
It's one of the longest standing debates in the industry, and there was actually a massive scandal that came out earlier this year where one of the biggest names or one of the biggest like resellers in the hobby when it comes to memorabilia was basically found to have been artificially producing like something like 50% of the autographs he was selling. And so now hundreds, if not thousands,
That's a
if
lot
not
of angry
tens of
people.
thousands of fake autographs are, and these are autographs that have been authenticated by Fanatics and by PSA and Beckett and
So it
all
got
the other
by them.
players. Yeah, because he was using like these I don't want to
I would imagine AI
put
can
out.
create a signature
That's what
these
I was going
days.
to say. He was using these like machines, these devices that could basically hand trace the signature of the player and then reproduce it
Just
on a
upload the
jersey or
picture
a
into it.
helmet. And so, and like, you know, a lot of times they resell cards that weren't originally autographed cards. They were just like, you know, non-autoed cards, and then they would autograph them. So yeah, he was using devices like that. The story itself took a really dark turn because while the FBI was investigating him, he ended up putting out like a confession, basically a confessional on like Facebook, saying like, "Yeah, I did this. All these autographs are fake. They're floating around in cyberspace on the app, like eBay, all these marketplaces. Like, basically, you guys have no idea what's real and what's not." And so when they came to arrest him, you know, they bashed down his door. They found him dead in his home. He killed himself, which is crazy. But he was looking at a significant amount of
Fraud,
time in jail. Yes, fraud, all sorts. I mean, he was doing it for like
felony fraud, and hundreds of
several
thousands of
decades,
hours
and
of
it was like hundreds of millions of dollars
millions.
worth of
Oh,
inventory.
God.
I'll
He did it
send
for
you the link.
decades.
Oh yeah.
I would imagine AI is going to caught, like I heard about the scanners this year, and we gotta wrap up here, but I want to do this again because there's so like the convergence of collecting and gambling is fascinating to me, and here you are, so we might as well have more conversations. Plus, I want to talk more of where gambling and cards converge in talking about perhaps grooming kids to get gambling-like behavior to then be able to gamble later in life.
Right.
When we talked before, we talked a little bit about that, but I want to talk about that, but we don't have time today. But
I sent you the link, by the way.
I see it in the chat. I'll grab that and take a look at it. Thank
Yeah.
you. But to wrap, like I.
$350 million in sales was the number over 20 years.
Is there a list of the cards that he was saying that?
They're still sorting it out. I don't
Oh
know the
my
details,
God.
but it says
Maybe
that
it's
they were.
best we just all don't know and keep assuming that it's real.
Right. I mean, people, it's like, and then there were rumors that like Luka Doncic's mother was signing for him when he was a rookie. There were rumors that like
I think
LaMelo.
more players should refuse to sign and just sign their own stuff and sell their own stuff because they would make the money. You're just making Topps money.
It's in their player contracts when they
They
sign
can,
with
I mean, they're going to
these
all
teams,
strike
these
eventually,
leagues,
right? And renegotiate.
right? That they but they're required to do this stuff, and like a lot of players are just like, nah, I'm not doing this. And
I gotta tell you, it would be annoying to sign 2,000 stickers.
oh yeah, for sure. But
Like, who would want to do that? And I can't believe
they're
some of them look spot on every time. And I'm like, mine would be so different every time.
yeah. I mean, some of these guys really respect the craft and appreciate pet, like you know that fans like good penmanship. Like, for instance,
Yeah,
Trevor
in person
Lawrence.
signing for a fan makes sense to me, but sitting down for a corporate guy to sign 2,000
Right.
stickers just seems pointless
Yeah, what I'm
for the
saying is there
athlete.
are players who care about that stuff, and they will sign perfectly every single time. Like Trevor Lawrence, Justin Herbert, like some of the older guys, Mariano Rivera, Derek Jeter, Ken Griffey, Andre Dawson. These are guys that, are known to have really, really beautiful signatures and sign, meticulously every single time. They take the time and effort to make sure that all of their memorabilia that,
I
ultimately
like that. And I like the
end up in the hands of
memorabilia
their
thing.
fans look nice,
They've saturated it all and turned every, I mean, the ping pong ball thing. Jesus.
Yeah,
Let's
and
get those.
that's just the tip of the iceberg, man.
Well, I'm glad I'm not where I used to be because I'm glad I'm not involved in any of this. I did buy one blaster of Topps Chrome 2025, and I'm looking at that, comparing it with 21, 22. And I'm going, God, these look like just the card looks bad. Like the edge, like it's not as nice as other chromes, it looks like.
I
It looks
don't like
cheap.
the
It looks
design this year
cheaper.
personally.
25 looks cheaper to me than other years. And I'm like, why would anyone, these are how much in a jumbo? No way.
I'm not a fan of this year's design. I liked last year's design and the year before. Honestly, 21 through 24, they were all pretty solid. I wasn't crazy about 2020. And then
What was
this year
the?
is a little bit funky, but whatever.
Yeah.
Tops is gonna have all the sports. The other thing is, I know we gotta wrap here, but I mentioned that Fanatics is becoming a monopoly, and they already, if they're if you know they aren't already, Panini is on their way out, but they continue to kick the can in court, so we don't
Panini on
know.
their way out, meaning they won't do the unlicensed cards?
Like they won't have license
I
the
kind of like
license
sometimes
for.
I enjoy Panini baseball. The prisms, not all the other bullshit, but
Well,
the
yeah, I
prisms.
don't mind them either, and half the reason is
They're kind of
because they're
fun.
so much cheaper and accessible than
They
some
look
of
good. They
stuff
look
Topps
good.
puts out.
Some of, I
Yeah, I
mean,
mean, Prism,
22,
it's
I
all
think look good.
subjective, but I agree. I think Prism has a sharp look to it. But like, again, Prism versus Topps Chrome is one of the longest standing debates that
Yeah.
will go on
I mean, I
forever
could do
about the.
without all the other, was it Chronicles has the like 20 different types of Chronicles you can get?
Yeah, they don't even make Chronicles anymore. But
Oh, they
yeah,
don't?
basically it would take all the leftover sets that they didn't make that year, and they would just put them all in one set, which was Chronicles.
Like Chronicles Titan, Chronicles Spectrum.
It was all like the sort of mid to low tier sets that they've made in the past, or sort of paying homage to an old set, that they would just put in one giant set. They haven't done that in a while. Topps did something very similar last year, though, with a set called Composite, where they basically were previewing all of the sets that would be coming out for the upcoming cycle or the upcoming season for football and basketball. They were testing out some of the sets that have since come out as standalone sets this year. It's very interesting the way they go about that. Again, I could talk about each one of these topics
Oh, we
alone,
will,
for
because
hours.
I
So
want to keep going, but I have an appointment.
all good.
I do. I mean, I get it with collecting it. I'm very guilty of it, but I went down a bad path with baseball cards because I got into that gambling aspect. Not even the gambling. I just got addicted to the process of looking on eBay for a break, and then participating in that break. And of course, I was chasing a player at the time too, which didn't help. And I got in deep so quickly. I didn't even realize it because I was spreading it out on credit cards. And I was like, oh, I only spent this much. And then when my wife found out, oh no, it was like double what I thought. Double. Because I wasn't tracking it because I wanted to ignore it because I didn't want to know what I was spending. And then when she found out, that shit became real. And that's
And
when.
that's usually what happens. It's not a an unusual story. These are the stories that we hear every single week in our weekly peer support meetings. And tell you what, some of them are horrifying. We literally have had people join meetings. And these are completely anonymous and confidential meetings, so I would never share names or refer to specific people. But just to generalize, there are people who literally will break down during their shares. The way we share therapy and GA, we do the same thing with Collectors MD. because their wives are, filing for divorce, or they're in legal trouble because, they went too far with the collecting and started using maybe a company card or something like that. Like, there's a lot of really, really scary things going on. And when you start peeling back the onion, it's like this mirrors gambling addiction, to the fullest extent. And the fact that there's no guardrails, no regulation, no tools and resources for recovery, or even any sort of acknowledgement, like when you see an ad or a commercial for a casino or a sports book, and it says, if you or somebody who has a problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER, and they provide you with the tools and resources. I mean, it's minimal, but it's at least, something that they're doing to help people that need it, right? It's a part of their corporate responsibility to do that. None of that exists in the hobby space. None of that exists in sports cards,
It does
TCG.
now,
Fanatics
Alan.
looks the
It
other
does
way,
now.
whatnot looks the other way. But yeah, that's what Collectors MD is all about. And so we are pushing to change that.
Where
We're
can
having
people find you?
conversations with the right folks. You can find us at
So they can get all the info.
collectorsmd.com. Yep,
And I'll
Collectors
put it in the
MD.
show notes too.
Totally appreciate that, Brian. It's collectorsmd.com. We're also
It's a good
on,
name.
pretty much all social media platforms: Instagram, Facebook, X, TikTok, YouTube. I mentioned we have two podcasts, or sorry, three podcasts now. LinkedIn, Discord. Working on getting our Reddit page back up. It was banned for the dumbest reason, but hopefully we can fix that soon. And we are also, active across the entire community, the hobby industry. Like I said, I've been on a handful of podcasts. I'm actually going to be on the Jeff Wilson show next week, which I'm really excited about. He is a
Oh.
very well-known name in the hobby. And so
Mine is but a drop in the bucket for you. His numbers will.
that's not even what it's about. It's just about having these
Well, no, that's
conversations,
good. You'll get a
getting
lot of
awareness.
eyes on what you're doing
Right,
because I'm
exactly.
sure there's a lot of
Leveraging the
people in his
audience.
audience who could use the group atmosphere that you provide.
Right, which I'm very grateful for.
That's
So,
awesome. That's amazing, actually, that you're
yeah.
doing that.
I do want to formally thank you, Brian, for having me on your show and for having this conversation.
Well,
And,
formally, I happy to have you.
yeah, no, but this
No,
was
you're.
this.
I think what you're doing is amazing because I've been talking about this before on these, and then all of a sudden, you, like I said, you popped up. I was watching Spitball, and they were talking about you, and I was like, "Wow, someone's doing that? That's cool. I should reach out to that guy." And then we're like
Yeah.
2, 3 weeks later, Rob put us in touch, and I was like, "Oh my gosh!" So no, that was awesome. I think what you're doing is great. You're a good dude, and thank you so much for doing this. But let's do this again. This was invigorating for me because I haven't recorded a podcast in a little bit, so this was nice for me. So I appreciate it
Yeah.
greatly,
No, of
Evan.
course.
And
Thank you.
I will let you know when this is up, and we'll talk on the other side. I gotta
All
run.
right, Brian. Sounds good, man.
Take care, Alex.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.